Hi, everybody. This is Pat O'Brien. Thanks for checking out the Pat O'Brien Show. Now, you can subscribe on iTunes and tell all your friends. Word of mouth, very important to us. For more information, go to thepatobrienshow.com. You can also follow me on Twitter, at P-O-B Pat O'Brien. Be nice. Although, we'll take the haters, too. New episodes of the Pat O'Brien Show every Tuesday. Thank you so much. Grateful to have you. Enjoy the show.
This is Corolla Digital.
Lies, you're telling me that you'll be true. Lies, lies, that's all I ever get from you. Tears, tears, I shed a million tears for you. Tears, tears, and now you're loving someone.
Well, how many hearts have been broken because of the lies and carries on of politicians the last few days? Welcome to the Pat O'Brien Show. I am Pat O'Brien. Thanks. One of these days, I'll explain why I'm not on Fox Sports Radio again. But I will say I'm getting paid by driving around town. but we'll get into that dysfunctional job some other time. But enjoy Petros and money. Welcome. Today we are going to talk about lies and truths and things that go on in the political world, which is our first kind of political show. John Amato runs a website called crooksandliars.com. John and I have been friends for 5 or 6 years. He inexplicably showed up on my Christmas card 1 year. Do you know that?
No, I don't.
Well, I took a picture of my family, and we were at the same barbecue, and John standing in the back drinking a Pepsi. And everybody kept saying, "Who is this guy?" And I said, "That's John Amato."
Did you say the handsome John?
Well, I didn't say handsome.
Oh, man.
I said smart.
All right.
John runs a website called crooksandliars.com and kind of keeps track of politicians. I will say, as a disclosure, we are both very liberal. I'm as liberal as I did stuff with the SDS back in the day. Tom Hayden and I were chased around and put on enemies list and blown all over the Midwest. John has taken that to another level. In fact, didn't they used to call you the vlog father because you're the first person to put videos on?
Yeah, that's one of my nicknames. I was the first guy that figured out that, you know what, listening, you know, reading quotes from politicians might be like, okay, but when you see them say it, it's so much more powerful. And I figured out a way to put video up online, and so the moniker, the vlog father. And, you know, I am Italian, although I'm not a conservative Italian. I'm not a Scalia or, you know, or a Christie or a Giuliani. So you know, but they still have to kiss the ring.
Yeah, well, I kiss your ring.
You know, they still got it.
I'll kiss your ass if this goes well today. Hey, John, thanks for joining us. Let's start with Chris Christie, because, oh, man, what a difference a couple weeks have made in this guy's life. You know, people complain about traffic all the time in New York, and you and I have been over that bridge many times and through those tunnels. But this one that started as a, and I'm going to be basic here, started as a four-day traffic jam without the governor wondering what it was, turning into literally maybe one of the biggest, well, could this be one of the biggest political scandals ever up there with, you know what?
Well, it's looking like that. You know, when you're talking with traffic, like, people in Los Angeles know what we're talking about, because there's nothing worse than being stuck.
I'm sipping my coffee, sorry. Yeah.
Like, you know, being stuck in, you know, traffic jams. Now, if you've ever driven over the, you know, the bridge, it's insane as it is to actually cut lane accesses down to one lane. It's mind-boggling. And then, you know, after you get over the bridge into New Jersey, can you actually figure out where you're going after you see all those crazy signs and routes? It's nuts trying to drive in New Jersey.
Not one of those signs makes sense, by the way.
It doesn't. You can't make a left anywhere.
I have limo drivers that can't find them.
Yeah, you know, you can't make a right. You can't go. It's just crazy. And so for people to close down access for political, you know, to attack people is, I've never heard of this before. It's insane because it affects, it doesn't affect your political opponents or people you want to, you know, teach a lesson to. It affects millions of law-abiding citizens that are just trying to get home after working hard, trying to pick up their kids. It's mind-boggling to me that this happened.
What we've learned in the last couple of weeks, 3 weeks, has been that there was an agenda. They were shut down by staff members, apparently, right, of Governor Christie, who I like, actually, kind of, but we'll get into that.
No, don't tell me you.
Well, I mean, I like his bluster. You know, I like people who have who are grandiose, but I don't like him now. How much of a well, first of all, he had his aides. When you look at these emails, and pretty much everybody knows about them by now, didn't it seem to you, John, that they knew about the emails, say, time for traffic problems? Those conversations just don't come up out of nowhere, right?
Absolutely.
This had to have been planned.
Without a doubt. I mean, it's not like you're going, oh, by the way, a traffic problem. Great. They immediately shut down access in Fort Lee. I mean, they've had to have talked about this. They had to get angry over something to actually pull this off. And you know that they had conversations before this email ever came out. It was like a signal. Okay, you know, it's green. The light's green. Go. And they took action. So it's really shocking as you read these emails.
And you and I have been around politics for a long time. I worked for Bobby Kennedy, and God knows what those people did back in that day, but we're talking about today now. But, you know, does this happen? I mean, give me, first of all, like a minute synopsis of what is going on there. You got the governor, then you've got these investigations. Just tell me what.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, right now, okay, so everybody must know the story where they shut down these lanes. And then his appointees came out and said, oh, you know, it's a traffic study. Okay, that was the reason, even though nobody at Port Authority knew why these lanes were shut down. And this bogus reason came out, it was a traffic study.
Right.
Flash forward, realize it's not a traffic study.
A study during a rush hour. Go ahead.
Right. And nobody knows about it, right? And not even the governor, by the way. He says he doesn't know about it. So it all blows up. And forces Chris Christie to give this big press conference, and he fires his deputy, chief of staff, another loyalist, Bridget Ann Kelly, and two former appointees that he plugged into the Port Authority. And one of them is a David Wildenstein, who got a job. This is what's so bizarre. In his press conference, he had the nerve to say that this guy wasn't a childhood friend. You know, he ran into him in school. Well, Wildenstein got this job. He got a job that was never there before. In the history of New Jersey, the job he has was just created for him. So do you give a job to somebody like that, a high-paying job in the Port Authority, if he's nothing to you, if he's just an acquaintance? No, this is a longtime friend, and
But yeah, I know. But doesn't that happen in politics a lot? I remember this great Tip O'Neill story where he appointed – who was Speaker of the House, and he appointed some complete stranger to a very high-level job in government that was part of his patronage. And nobody knew who this guy was, and they asked Tip why he was appointed, and he said, because he went to my mother's funeral. I mean, there are favors handed out all the time, but you think this David Wildenstein might be a little different. Was he put in there for a purpose?
Well, obviously, to oversee what's going on at the Port Authority. To me, it's another sort of insider spy to give him information. And so when we see these emails, now his best buddy, Wildenstein, you know, he's taking the fifth all over the place. He won't answer any questions. He's refusing to speak. And Christie actually said that he hasn't talked to them. I mean, how do you – and he fired his deputy chief of staff, a longtime loyalist to Mr. Christie, Bridget Ann Kelly. And he says, I didn't talk to her. Once I found out they were lying to me, I fired them. Does that make any sense to you, Pat, if an employee of your radio shows does something that's you know, out of bounds, you wouldn't ask, like, why did you do this? What happened?
Well,
just
first
explain
of all,
it to me.
They'd ask me first. but then the Wall Street Journal comes up with the picture after he doesn't know the guy, right? Picture of him and the guy out in public
Absolutely.
Together.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't even know him. I haven't seen him since then. Then there's the picture, right, which is big evidence against – you're lying. It's just an out-and-out lie. You know, and part of this big press conference that Christie did was really –
too long, by the way.
That's the dangerous part. You know, the first 40 minutes was fine. He was doing what he was supposed to do. He stayed on for 108 minutes. I mean, you just open yourself up to so many more problems because you're getting sloppy, you're tired, you're trying to answer every stupid question that comes at you,
and
you can make mistakes.
Yeah, and I think in those situations, don't you get cocky too because you think it's going well and
right.
You think, oh, I've got this covered. And then he comes out with this Bridget Ann Kelly, who, by the way, holds his whole future in her head, and these other people, and a little... like we said at the beginning, Lies by the Knickerbockers, which, by the way, I thought was the Beatles when that song came out, but it's not. But, I mean, he got himself in trouble. He hung himself with his own information, right? Or, you know what I mean? But why would a guy this politically smart lie about his chief of staff? In the meantime, probably back in his office, they're trying to shred every possible thing they have. But – I mean, I don't understand his motive here. Did he think he could get away with it, I guess, is the question.
I mean, you know, when you look at New Jersey politics and you look at the governor, Christie, reelected, I mean, you know, you sort of like him as a blustery type guy. Well, he's got a lot of, you know, there's this narcissistic quality. And look, people commit crimes because they don't think they're going to get caught, right?
It's always a cover-up.
It's always the cover-up that gets you. So this whole ego-based political machine and retribution – you know, you think you're invincible, and even if you're working for that person up, you think you're invincible. And then when it hits the fan, everybody's running for cover. You know, Wilstein just came out and said that he'll tell the truth if he gets complete immunity.
Right? That's a flag right there.
Right. So, well, what are you going to tell us? Right? So, things are unfolding. You know, now Christie has just hired an ex-Giuliani bigwig defense attorney on his staff to, a quote-unquote, do his own internal review, right? But also to help the investigation along if they need help.
Well, isn't there also an outside guy coming in, too, that's I forget his name, the bald-headed guy, who has investigated a lot of things. He's supposed to be, like, the best.
Right, from the assembly guys, they're doing the whole investigation. They just issued, I think, 17 new subpoenas. And so they're coming across with that, which is – so it's all in the motions. And there's lots of people. Obviously, they want to talk to Bridget. They want to talk to a lot of people. You know, by the way, what's interesting is Bill Baroni, who was the other guy, it was his campaign manager for two terms, right? He worked I wrote this the other day. I said, why did Christie ever use this guy? I mean, he worked on John McCain's presidential campaign. How did that turn out? Not good. He worked on Rudy Giuliani's presidential campaign. That didn't turn out so well. But how can your camp – when it's your campaign manager, he's like your best friend. I mean, you spend all your waking hours with this guy during a campaign. And he's trying to say that he had – you know, they had no knowledge what his former campaign manager was going to do. It's insane.
Let's go deep with this. John Amato is our guest. He runs the website, which is very – it's great. How would you describe it? It's called Crooks and Liars. That should give you – an indication right there, but
yeah, I mean, you know, I start.
Do you out people? Do you? What happens there?
Well, I mean, over the years we've done investigative reports. I started as a response, really, to the anger of the Iraq War and the
right.
lies that were told. So it's like there's a lot of crooks and liars involved in this. And
well, crooks is a big word, by the way.
Crooks, and you know, my logo is a little Richard Nixon as a bandit. And people, you know, that logo's – everybody knows it out in the world.
And I think a lot of people – and you and I talked about this the other night. I ran into you. And, you know, nobody really picked up on this until, ironically, after you and I had spoken about it. But the I'm not a bully and then the Nixon I'm not a crook pretty much put these two guys in the same schematic, doesn't it?
Absolutely. You know, as soon as he said I'm not a bully, I actually tweeted it and it got retweeted all around, which is, God, it sounds like I am not a crook, Richard Nixon. Because once you start denying something that's so, you know, especially Chris Christie's made his reputation as being a bully, right? It's just like when John McCain came out and said, I'm not a maverick. The guy reinvented himself as being a maverick. And then to deny that even happened, it's crazy. We have so much footage of this guy, Chris Christie, berating teachers. You know, and we talk about his weight because it's part of who he is and his medical condition. He just had surgery to help him out. He uses
it looks like he lost a lot of weight with that surgery, by the
right,
way.
Right. Well, he uses his girth and his weight as an intimidating factor. So when he gets into your face and starts pointing, he's putting that weight on you. It's very intimidating for certain people.
John Amato is our guest. By the way, you can go to iTunes regularly and click on the show. Give us a nice star. 5 stars would be nice. 4 is okay. 2, don't stop listening. It's the Pat O'Brien Show. You go to thepatobrienshow.com. And by the way, you get all the past podcasts too, right? And Joe Walsh, by the way, we had on last week. And you know Joe. Joe's our friend. And he was spectacular. And I got a lot of response to that. That'll be up there for a long time. So come listen to John and tune on to Joe and whatever else is on there. When you talk about politicians and grandiosity and mistakes, I was involved in a scandal. But the thing about mine was, first of all, nobody got hurt. It was no big deal, except that I have a nice voice that got on the Internet. But the one thing I did, John, as you know, the day of it, I admitted it was me. There was no cover-up. I mean, I said, look, I made this voicemail and whatever happened, and I didn't try to lie. I didn't try to run. And it seems to me that everybody who does that, including me, I've made millions and millions of dollars since then. Everybody thought I was dead. It seems like the people that try to cover it up are always the ones that get fucked.
Yeah, because it just continues the web of lies, because then one lie begets another lie, and you're not sure what this person's going to say. And so it really creates such a nightmare scenario. And obviously, in your case especially, you know, being honest and coming forthright, people, you know, most people in the country are forgiving. We've all made mistakes. Doesn't matter, you know, where you're from.
Whether Second chances, sure.
I mean, and so if you come clean and say, listen, this is what happened, people will give you a second chance. I mean, even crazy Anthony Weiner was running for mayor again. Yeah. It's like
well,
insane.
Mine was nothing near that. The only thing about mine was Charlie Sheen said it was a great effort. But and I mentioned the millions of dollars, not to brag. Because a lot of people think I was just fired and let go. No, I went back to work. You know why? I'm talented and I told the truth. Now, what is in store for Chris Christie? Is this going to hang over his head all the time? And is it? It's Bridget Ann Kelly, right?
Yes.
He must be just. She must just scare the hell out of him right now for what she must know, right?
Right. I mean, you
and
know,
subpoenas don't. You can't lie when your hand goes up on the Bible.
Right. I mean, you can lie, but that's just a you know prison term.
Another level, yeah.
But obviously, he's nervous by bringing in this high-powered defense lawyer to oversee everything because he knew he needed somebody in there to make sure. Also, they're talking about they're going to try to use like executive privilege, like with how the president uses it in the Oval Office as a governor. So they're trying to make sure, well, what can we hold back? Because they're going to try to hold back as much as they can.
But doesn't that make it worse for him, John?
Not if they don't get anything. I mean, if nothing ever comes out, I mean, this is what his hope is, which is that if they can't tie anything to me, I can keep denying and said that they did it behind my back and nothing will stick. And that's what they're playing on right now. That's what they're hoping for. But once the subpoenas start being issued, once people are forced to give testimony, you don't know what's going to happen. I mean, they never expected Bridgegate to take place at all. They were, if you read those emails, they were laughing when one email said, you know, I feel kind of bad, the traffic, and the other guy said, well, it's Barbara Buono voters.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Who cares?
About
it's Barbara
their kid.
Buono, you know.
You know, and does social media, I know you're an expert on that as well, have a lot to do with this? Because think of what would have happened during Watergate if we had Twitter and social media. And the only people looking into that were two guys, Woodward and Bernstein, at the beginning, and nobody believed them. But does social media, for right or for wrong, push these things, these scandals, we're now talking globally now, push these along further than they would have gone? You know what I mean?
Right. Well, they definitely have a big effect today because everybody's connected.
Yeah,
it's not like nobody knows anything that's going on. We're all connected now, you know, to this global internet network. So information flies. It's free and it's for, you know, although with net neutrality.
But even speculation flies. And
absolutely.
That's worse than information,
innuendos,
right?
Criticisms, weird opinions, they're out there. And so it has been I mean, it's been great for everybody, I think, involved. But it also can put more pressure on people and expose more things. Now, the problem for Christie is, you know, he's always been that arrogant guy who's angered a lot of people. This just opens the floodgates now for the news media and the newspapers and investigative journalists to turn over every rock in his career. And now he's going to be subjected to a form of scrutiny that he hasn't really seen yet. He would have seen the scrutiny if he announced that he was running for president. And then once that cycle starts going, but now it's happening, you know, 2 years before.
But now I think a lot of people are finding out, too. John Amato, our guest from crooksandliars.com. How do they reach you, by the way?
My direct email. We have one. If you want to email me, it's at crooksandliars@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter, John Amato. And also you can email me privately at john@crooksandlawyers.com. And like our site's everywhere. We're on Facebook. You know, we have a huge presence.
Yeah.
You can also come to my house if you're cute.
Oh, no, I know. I understand that. John Amato, JohnAmato, at Gmail. Is that what it is?
No, well, my part.
Oh, your Twitter is at John Amato. Yes. I'm sorry. I'll get that right. But I think what this has also done for Chris Christie is that I think for a lot of people, he was thought to be the, you know, the guy who's going to carry the torch for the Republican Party. But now, as this thing came out, now all the people that didn't like him, and it turns out there were more than I thought in the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
Have said, the hell with this guy. Let's move on to somebody else. Jeb Bush, he's not going to run, but, you know, move on to somebody else.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that I've been looking at is Chris Christie fills the bill for a lot of the Tea Party and the base Republicans. But the one thing he doesn't have going for him is he doesn't have that accent, right? He's not from the South. He's a Northerner. And for whatever reason, that base doesn't trust Northerners as much. And I mean, and then once he, you know, I don't understand. Like these people are very insane. You've seen the Guns and Ammo story where a guy actually wrote, like, you know, maybe some of these crazy automatic rifles, you know, shouldn't be sold on the streets, and they ousted this guy from a job.
Let's go back here. What do you mean by accent? I mean, you have to have a southern accent to be president.
Well, I think that the base of the Tea Party movement and that real conservative streak comes from the South,
right?
And so, you know, they'd rather see, you know, if he was a governor of South Carolina or, you know, down in Georgia or whatever.
That's, you know what? That's why Bill Clinton was so great, because he could get into that Southern thing and talk to you eye to eye.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I think it's there. They're not ever going to say that, but it's definitely a problem. Because if you look at Chris Christie's politics, he's as conservative as they come. I mean, he's still fighting, you know, he was fighting up to this day being, you know, legalizing gay marriage, where it's sweeping the country all over the place. And if he's supposed to be this liberal conservative, whatever that is supposed to be, he wouldn't be fighting this. But the fact is that he, you know, he shook Obama's hand. He hugged him during the Sandy.
That's a problem for him, too.
That's a big problem.
I think that probably he thought, or the Republicans thought, might have been his biggest problem, but not anymore.
Right. Well, not anymore.
And there's the money used for a tourism video for $25 million that he was in, and you know.
But don't forget, he also was pretty outspoken on gun rights, and that's like sacrosanct now to the Republican Party and conservatives. You know, taking away my 8,000 guns that I have stocked, you know, for the coming zombie apocalypse.
So he wasn't a gimme anyway, right, Chris Christie?
Well, to be honest with you, you know, when he came on, he really does a good job. One-on-one interviews, speaking. He is a good speaker. He's a good communicator.
But he's entertaining is what he is.
Yes, he can be entertaining. I mean, there's people – I don't find it, you know, attractive in a politician, but people do. And he's never been high on the conservative list. But, you know, now with the polling, before even all this started, he was, you know, he was neck and neck with Hillary Clinton early on. So the big money people – in the Republican Party, they look beyond, you know, some of their platform positions, right? And they can, because they want to get somebody in the White House that'll win, right?
But isn't the one thing, then we're going to move on to something else, but isn't the one thing that voters look for, especially now, is an honest, quote unquote, honest politician? And I just don't think anybody can look at Chris Christie anymore without thinking about, you know, closing down a bridge. And I think Bridgegate is going to be so much more when they come out with all these emails. It's going to be, I would think, a deliberate attempt to mess up some of those towns in New Jersey. But, I mean, don't people look for an honest guy or woman? And a lot of guys can't survive that label of being dishonest. Now, Hillary Clinton for somehow is going to, but I don't know.
Right. Well, you know. Yeah, honesty obviously is a very important virtue to have as a candidate, and people do want to see honesty. But, you know, the way we're very polarized now is much greater than ever before. And I think push comes to shove, no matter what Christie's done, if he's doing okay, the Tea Party and the base will support him wholeheartedly. That's just what's going to happen. No matter what they say, there's a lot of people, you know, trying to torpedo him because they think I don't know why they think he's left. He's, you know, he's not close to being a lefty. But, and again, now, you know, it's all open. Everybody's going to investigate everything they can on this guy. And, I mean, I don't believe his career is over yet, but the winds are blowing in that direction.
The interesting thing about it is that this thing has just gone. You can't turn anywhere, including this podcast, without hearing about it. And I don't think it's going to go away. Before we end Chris Christie's career here, what do you think Bridget Ann Kelly knows? That's his – what's her title? She's his chief of staff?
She was a deputy chief of staff. I mean, she obviously had to be privy to the conversations to set this whole thing up because they didn't just, you know, they weren't just guzzling beer.
These guys, I mean, people always say, you know, in sports, the Sandusky thing, and coaches know everything. Governors know everything, right?
Absolutely. And especially,
there's no frickin' way he didn't know this was going on, in my opinion.
In mine also. This guy, you know, Barbara Buono was on TV saying that this guy runs a paramilitary type operation. Everybody knows everything. I'm sorry. He's a hands-on guy.
Right.
He knows everything. These people have been loyal to him. He knows everything that's going on. I mean, you just – these people, why would they do this and not tell him? Like it makes no sense for them to even do this without his knowledge because what are they getting out of it?
And people also don't like the tricky dick operation of running or doing something where there's dirty tricks involved or I'll get him. And I think that resonates with voters. I don't think they want somebody who's going to trick them or lie to them or do something what am I looking for? Be a bully, I guess.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but what we've found in our studies, and I've also co-authored a book about right-wing extremism and called Over the Cliff. And
by the way, you can get that book on the Amazon link on our podcast.
We have
a link to Amazon.com. While you're listening, just punch that down by John Amato's book. Go ahead.
And there's a strain where they actually like an authoritarian type candidate, and they're fine with him doing things as long as he's being authoritative and being this leader. So it's just a small segment. Most people in the country aren't as polarized because they're trying to feed their families. They're trying to survive in a really bad economy. But it is an interesting take on this, and we'll see what happens. I'm really looking forward to the next few weeks. This is going to be a lot of fun.
For you, maybe.
For me.
But not for Chris Christie. And I think the Republicans will have to now sort of narrow their road a little bit or even expand it because I don't think this is going to be the guy. A couple quick things. Duck Dynasty went back on the air with a 28% decrease in ratings. Does that mean that 28% of the people that watched it were gay?
I know a lot of gay people like duck calls. I don't know. But, you know, and that's in it. When I saw that story, and we're running it on Crooks and Liars, I was kind of surprised, actually, because I almost thought that their ratings would go up.
So did I. I was shocked.
Like, because, you know, any publicity, you know, is good publicity, especially in the entertainment industry. But apparently, they really turned off. I think a lot of people weren't as familiar with his, you know, really super evangelistic streak out. And now you see, like, YouTubes of him not only slamming gays, but saying how great, you know, Jim Crow laws was
right.
And how African Americans really seem really happy under Jim Crow.
Yeah. I mean, 12 Years a Slave. Is going to be in the conversation, too. And I bring Duck Dynasty up because I think politicians are going to have to look at that because all the things that Phil Robinson stood for, you know, massive amount of guns and anti-homosexual and this sort of, you know, blacks are okay. We don't need – African-Americans are okay. We don't need to help them out. That 28% decrease in viewership says a lot to me, and it should say a lot to politicians.
Absolutely. It should say a lot to the networks, too. It is a shrinking.
That's a big number, man.
In ratings, that's a huge number. But, you know, those views now are shrinking more and more. But they're becoming more and more vocal. And they have places like Fox News and AM talk radio is still very powerful and has a big audience. But those views are shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And now, you know, when you just look at the legalization of marijuana, I never thought that we'd see that happen, and it's happening quickly. And now Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, came out yesterday and said that, you know, he's actually in favor of medical marijuana.
Right. Reid for weed. I can see the
that's the bumper sticker.
I can see the bumper sticker. Well, let's move into that issue because I never thought I'd see a day where it'd be legalized in any way. But it turns out now Andrew Cuomo is looking into it in New York. Is the high over the legalization of marijuana, is it financial? Because in Colorado, just the people are making money all over the place.
Well, yeah, I mean, look.
And states can look at this and say, hey, here's another revenue. It's not a lottery.
It's a big revenue stream, especially, you know, with states having really big budgetary problems. It's a way to bring in a lot of money, and it's not going to affect any of their voters. I mean, if you want to buy weed, you'll buy weed, and you don't care, you know, how much it's being taxed because you want the weed. You don't want to get arrested. So that's a big thing. But just the public perception, it's interesting. You know, the days in the 50s and 60s and, you know,
that reefer madness.
Reefer madness that's going to drive you crazy, or it's a gateway drug. That's fading again. I mean, we're in a new chapter. Lots of things are happening socially. I mean, I think New Hampshire is the first. The House of New Hampshire just passed to legalize recreational use of pot or weed. And that's the first legislative body that's done that. So what the big clash that's coming is, you know, it's still illegal. It's a federal law. So there's a problem. Like what's hindering it even happening more is the fact that if a state, you know, starts legalizes it, well, the feds can still come in and arrest everybody because it's a federal crime. And that's actually the part that it's really hurting is the cash flow, because bankers are afraid to loan money to these entities, because then what happens if they get raided, or if, let's say,
they're culpable for financing a
criminal operation.
Yeah.
And let's say in 2016, who knows, let's say Ted Cruz, you know, goes into the White House and then he just makes pot illegal. And now, you know, with a 20-year life sentence if you get caught with a joint. So they're going to have to do something federally first before it really takes off in the country. Yeah. But it's a slow boil, and it's, boy, is it rising.
I don't know if it's so slow. I mean, I think just in the time that we've seen from the Colorado experience to now – it seems like everybody's talking about it. My thing is, I don't want everybody driving around stoned. I mean,
well,
I really
no, it's
don't.
Not right. Well, it's not like, well, listen, you know, now the pot's legal, we can, you know, drive and smoke weed. No, that's not what it's saying. I mean, people are doing it anyway. They've been doing it since the 50s and 60s.
Right.
So nothing like, you know, I don't think it's going to change significantly. And you know what? Now the police will develop a new test and they'll, you know, arrest people for driving under marijuana, and, you know, they'll make more money on it. And the courts will make more money off
the ticket. Will be $450,
and the prisons, yeah, you know, will be happy. But
it's great. John Amato's our guest, and he's great, man. Crooksandliars.com, and there's all. It's almost like a left version of Political. You can find almost anything on this website. I was checking this morning about everything on there I wanted to read, and I love it. Check it out. Before we go, let's talk about Wall Street. Have you seen The Wolf of Wall Street?
You know, I have it in my queue. I watched the first 30 minutes of it, and it was I enjoyed the first 30. It was pretty funny, but I haven't had a chance to finish. Right. I actually switched and was watching Her. And if you saw Her, it was amazing.
I love Her. We know Joaquin, and he should get – well, by the way, why Tom Hanks wasn't nominated, it really pisses me off, but that's another story. Will Wall Street ever be – because Wall Street's done really well, 16,000, through all of this. And does that get lost in the political spectrum now on what to do about these hedge funds and these guys that are wolves of Wall Street?
Well, you know, absolutely. When there's a Republican –
who control everything. I mean, I was trying to buy an apartment in New York, and I settled on a price. And let's pretend – well, I settled on a price. And then a hedge fund guy came in and tripled it.
Right.
Said, oh, I'm going to take this, and I'll pay cash. Bye-bye.
The money – there's – crazy money. It's monopoly money that's out there with these hedge funds. And, you know, during a Republican administration, if the stock market was at 16,000, that's all you would hear from the CNBC, the Fox Business, how incredible things are because the stock market is high. But now that a Democrat's in office with these incredible highs, it's like no big deal because – and then the actual CNBC people are sort of suddenly worried about the lower and the middle class jobs. Like, they could care less, right? It's all about the upper crust.
I mean, I think we're losing that. It is. I mean, one of the reasons Clinton is so popular is that everybody, baby boomers like me, remember the Clinton stock market in the Clinton economy.
Right, but
I put my kid through college on
a Clinton. Right, but remember, it translated in jobs to people.
And that's a good
point. During
Clinton's
years, the employee had the upper hand with management. Like, how many times, you know, like the unemployment was, like, I don't know, 4%. And so if another company wanted you as an employee, they, you know, bumped your salary. Then they gave you like a triple platinum health care insurance. And then they gave you like 5 weeks of vacation.
Because
then now it's like, we'll give you 29 hours. You'll make $750. You know, don't worry. You'll be able to get on the SNAP program. You can get some food stamps, you know, if you want the job. If not, goodbye.
Couple things before we go again, because you're so interesting and good at this stuff. Voter ID, how big a story? Now, Pennsylvania is stricken down that law, trying to, or they did rather. But voter ID seems so, it's not sexy unless you're an African American.
Right. Well, that's a huge, huge issue, and it's a huge problem. And unfortunately, you know, the Roberts Court, John Roberts, he was at the forefront during the Bush administration. People don't realize the reason why he's a Supreme Court justice is because he was so loyal to George Bush, and he was instrumental in Florida getting votes kicked off the rolls, getting votes disqualified. And so once he was there, you knew
arbitrarily, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Let's not relive that whole nightmare. Yeah. But and he's been ruling in favor of these voter ID laws. And really, it's like a poll tax. I mean, you know, every study ever done shows that if you try to, you know, put a tax, if you use any kind of a voter ID, who doesn't vote? It's the elderly and it's minorities.
The NSA, John, people like you and I should be screaming about this. I mean, I spent a lot of time in my younger years working for rights of gays and lesbians. I worked with Harvey Milk, actually, and it's quite obvious that I'm a straight man. It's quite you can go on the internet and it's pretty much assured. But I was very concerned about rights for gays and lesbians in that community. Harvey was a friend, but and now we've got this whole NSA thing, the snooping thing, and the ACLU has got to be going out of their minds. Will that ever settle down? And the president was on last week talking about how he's not going to, you know, trying to convince America that they're not being listened to. Now, when you and I were in college, I'm just going to assume you did drugs at some point in your life. When you and I were in college,
I might have.
We thought everybody, I thought that every drug deal I was making was being listened to by somebody. But now it becomes a reality. By the way, I don't do that anymore, just so you know.
It's a definite reality. I mean, there's been so many stories out there where they've actually, you know, spied on people's, on politicians' porn habits, right? And that's the big elephant in the room. Like, when these people have this much access to everything, well, you know, eventually somebody's going to ask for a political, you know, a favor. What's that favor going to be? You know, I'm running this race here in Rhode Island and I need dirt on that guy. Everybody's privacy is at stake. And it's a really dangerous precedent to be made. And you know, a lot of the left is very disappointed in Obama that the program has expanded so much under his watch.
And that swings us right back to where we started with Chris Christie, because I think that's the fear. I think the Christie thing has shown that things go on. And, you know, you can't judge a book by its fat cover. I'm sorry about that. Maybe trying to get Mr. Christie to go to a salad bar.
I bet you the NSA has a great file on Christie. We could probably say, listen, you know, let's call Clapper.
What would J. Edgar Hoover do? But, I mean, doesn't all this connect to in the next running up to the next presidential of trust, which I don't know if we'll ever get, but they all tie together. You know, it's Chris Christie or the Chris Christies of the world. Are they monitoring what we do? They obviously can control what we do. Will our kids get to school? Will my African-American friends get to vote? I mean, these are things that are a much bigger issue, and I think that's going into 2016. What people have to find is that candidate who can tie all these things together and try to make the good times roll again.
Yes, and Chris Christie isn't that candidate. He's going to restrict women's rights. He's going to restrict gay rights.
Well, could there ever be a candidate like that, and when?
There's never going to be a perfect candidate, obviously. But, you know, I think America especially, you know, is really looking for somebody to to lead them to a better place, because with the whole mortgage crisis and the whole economy blowing up, I mean, it's hurt millions and millions and millions of people. This is, you know, almost as bad as the Great Depression. And it takes a long time to recover from that. And people are looking for somebody to help them.
Can you don't have to stop just because I pointed to somebody. But I want to get back to the old Democratic theme song. And that happy days are here again. And I'm just wondering if those happy days will ever be back, or is it just too much of a pipe dream?
Well, you know, finally some good progressives are showing up. And Elizabeth Warren is a terrific progressive. And she's also been attacking the, you know, the Wall Street and the banking industry. And what's happening now is that there's a push to expand Social Security. That's going to be a big key moving forward for the progressive base, because, you know, instead of this chain CPI that President Obama was willing to negotiate to try to get Republicans to sign onto a budget, which will cut benefits for people getting Social Security, you can expand it very easily. And remember, so many people live off of Social Security. So that'll be a big theme, and Elizabeth Warren is driving it. And now look at, you know, the new mayor in New York. He's a big progressive. We're starting to see more of a presence of progressive politics.
Well, that's a good way to end. And I think they're all looking for those happier days, but all these things just complicate things. But the good news is that people are reading, they're listening, and you should tune in or watch or keep track of what John Amato is doing. It's a noble profession that he has. Crooksandliars.com. Tom, we got to get you back here. We go for hours and hours.
Yes, we could.
When I run for governor of South Dakota, even with a scandal, you know, I think people like honest politicians.
And hey, I'll be your deputy campaign manager.
I was thinking Parks and Recreation, to be honest with you. That's it for this time. I'm Pat O'Brien. Go to iTunes. Get next week's. John Amato, thank you, man.
My pleasure. Good to
be
here.
I love you. Good to see you. That's it. We'll see you next time.
So let's tell the world about it now. Happy days are here again. Your cares and troubles are gone.
This is Corolla Digital.